Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family. Finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. Now, here's the host of the top-rated show for moms, Maria Bailey, on Mom Talk Radio.
It's another week here at Mom Talk Radio. I'm excited. We have 2 weeks until National Moms Night Out and Mother's Day. National Moms Night Out takes place the Thursday night before Mother's Day. You can go to Mom Talk Radio or you can go to momsnightout.com, N-I-T-E.com, and find out some details, find some events that are happening in your place or have your own Moms Night Out. Speaking of Mom's Night Out, it always comes with a little bit of food, right? Doesn't Mom's Night Out, it always equates to wine and food. So, you know, when I think of food, I always think of things that are a treat. And recently, I was introduced to Sprinkles. So Sprinkles, the cupcake company, and if you don't have one in your area, you got to go online and see their ATM that spits out. You could order whatever cupcake you want, and it comes out fresh in a little box. It's so cute, and it's so fun to use. But I actually ordered Sprinkled cupcakes, and I'm going to thank all the moms that helped me do my job raising my children. So the mom who helps me with carpool, the mom that feeds my dog when I'm traveling. I decided this Mother's Day, I'm treating other moms. And when I think of treating myself, I got to tell you this story. So I love really great produce and really great fruit. I have some strawberries sitting on my desk right now. But tomatoes, I love tomatoes. I eat tomatoes like they're apples. And the other day, you know, I've talked about Tasty Lee tomatoes on the show before. And we had the CEO on. So I had to run into a grocery store that didn't sell Tasty Lee tomatoes. And I wanted to make some salsa. And I saw these big red tomatoes. And I'm like, wow, those look really good. They were called slicing tomatoes. So I guess that meant you sliced them and ate them. Anyways, they were so red. And I was like, oh, these are going to taste great in that salsa. I am telling you, they had no flavor, no flavor at all when I got home. I was so mad. And I was just like, okay, the whole time I'm cutting these tasteless tomatoes into my salsa, I'm thinking, I got to like, ask for Tasty Lee tomatoes next time, because that CEO, when he was on Mom Talk Radio, told me about all the seeds and how they get the flavor. And I'm thinking, it's amazing that people can grow tomatoes that have no flavor at all. And I find that with fruits and vegetables too right now. So Tasty Lee tomatoes, it's my choice of tomatoes. So for this Mom's Night Out, when I make my salsa, I'm making them with Tasty Lee tomatoes. So we have a great show lined up for you today. And we're going to be talking with physicians. We're going to be talking with moms who are doing really creative things. The CEO of Divalicious Moms, which is New York based, but they have events all over the country. We got a lot to talk about today. So when we return, we're going to have Dr. Elizabeth Sandell with us. And she is a board certified physician, medicine, and rehabilitation and brain injury specialist. So she's going to be talking about when to return to play after you've been hit in the head.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
A lot has been discussed and talked about when it comes to concussions, our children playing football or any kind of sports, really, because I think it's kind of a myth that it only happens if your child is playing Little League flag football or others. But it can really happen on the bike and on a trampoline and on gymnastics and just on the playground. So we decided to bring in a specialist who can talk to us about when you make that decision to return to play when your child has been injured in some way. Dr. Elizabeth Sandell is board certified in physical medicine and rehabilitation and brain injury medicine. She specializes in caring for patients with brain injuries and has been doing so for over 30 years. She is currently a medical director for Paradigm Management Systems, which provides medical case management to catastrophically injured workers, including those with concussions and severe brain injuries. She is joining us today to talk about this very important topic. So welcome, Doctor, to Mom Talk Radio.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity.
So how do you identify when a hit to the head might be something you need to worry about?
The symptoms and signs of a concussion are pretty typical, although sometimes subtle. They would be confusion, disorientation, memory difficulty, perhaps double vision, blurred vision, headaches, dizziness or balance problems. The youth athlete or child will have nausea and vomiting. Actually, less often, concussion is accompanied by either loss of consciousness or seizures. It's kind of these vague symptoms that are sometimes difficult to diagnose. And of course, a significant percentage of athletes, young athletes, do not report their symptoms. This is a major problem. So sometimes it's the observation of the coach or the parent that there's a little balance problem or some confusion when they have a conversation with the athlete. Athletes are not always reporting, and there have been some interesting studies showing why that is. As we would expect, some of it is because they want to go back into competition, but other things like the fact that they are not sure that the injury was serious, or they're not even aware that the symptoms resulted from the concussion, make them less likely to report. The most important question that you have here is about decisions, I guess, to remove the player and then to return them to play.
When do you know that your child is ready to go back to play?
Well, it's a very good question. And it's not just a question of back to play. It's also a question of back to school. So I think the consensus is that children can go back to school with some symptoms if they're manageable. But they certainly can't go back to play until they have resolution of the symptoms. And I think the ultimate decision needs to be made by a physician who's qualified, who's a specialist, and knows the concussion protocols and guidelines. But, you know, I want to also, of course, tell the moms and dads out there that that it's very important for them to be attuned to what's happening with their child. And, of course, they're the most qualified. First of all, they know their children's medical history, developmental history, and, of course, their academic history, their personality and habits. So they can be very helpful to keep a journal of the symptoms and the observations that they make. And so especially because the child might not report everything, the parents are really crucial. And that information needs to be provided to the physician and the team. And I want to say in terms of the team that concussion clinics are probably the best place for a child or youth who's had a concussion and has persistent problems after a day or two. So they're most likely to have seen an emergency room physician or a family physician or pediatrician. But these concussion clinics, which are increasingly being developed, are a really great place because there's a physician, but usually neuropsychologist and physical therapist, for example. So a lot more people. But again, the parents are really crucial, I think, to make sure that they're following what's happening at home, especially.
Right. So is there a difference between boy and girl head injuries or just any differences if you have a boy or a daughter or a son?
Oh, that's a very good question and a very interesting one that we don't have a lot of answers for. There's much higher risk for girls in terms of concussion for girls playing the same sport as boys. That would be true for soccer, baseball, softball, lacrosse, and also basketball. So the risk is higher for girls. It's as high as 3 times greater for girls playing softball compared to boys' baseball, for example.
Really?
And
really?
Soccer,
that's amazing.
Right. And, And soccer and lacrosse, it's about twice as high. There are unclear reasons for this. It may have to do with anatomy. It may have to do with what we call kinesiology, which is the movement of the girl, for example, heading the ball. Greater head acceleration, perhaps when they contact the ball. It might be hormonal differences, another area that's being explored. And it might be simply the girls tend to report. They speak up more about their injury. They don't shake it off quite as much as boys. It may be a combination of factors, but it's definitely true, and they are much more prone to what's called the post-concussion syndrome, which is headaches, fatigue, concentration problems, again, the dizziness and balance problems that you see acutely as well, much more prevalent in female athletes. I'm increasingly concerned about this in the collision sports. So it's boys football and rugby and girls soccer. We used to call these the high contact sports. Increasingly, we're calling them collision sports. So any sport where there's a lot of physical contact, those are the high risk sports. And basketball, even basketball is more of a collision sport now than it was certainly when I was in high school and college. You know, things have really changed. There's a lot of research now. Of course, everybody's hearing about CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. That is the tau protein abnormality that's seen in the NFL and other the brains of other people. A lot of research there. And a lot of research showing with neuroimaging studies that there's actual damage to the brain. One recent study showed youth football players, you know, had changes in the brain. But there's
so much that needs to be discussed around the subject matter. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I want to give everyone your website. It's ElizabethSandellMD.com. We have a link to it on Mom Talk Radio, and I really appreciate you joining us today on Mom Talk Radio. And when we return, we're going to turn a spotlight on a mom doing amazing things.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
This is my favorite segment of Mom Talk Radio, the Spotlight on Moms. We are today talking with Blair Critch. She is the mother of two children, 12 and 10, and she blogs at blaircritch.com, C-R-I-T-C-H.com. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Blair.
Thanks so much for having me.
I liked your talking point. It's so intriguing because I actually saw a billboard going up the turnpike in Florida a few weeks ago, and it was actually about dads being role models for their sons. But you want to talk about moms being role models, how you raise boys to be good future husbands. Tell us when did you realize this was your role?
Honestly, I realized this is my role when I went back to work and needed my husband to help out. We needed to both participate in the household things. And he wanted to help out, but didn't know how to cook a meal, didn't know how to do laundry. And all of a sudden, I realized, wait a minute, I do not want my boys to go into a marriage without being equipped to be an equal partner in that home. And I want their wives to know that they're coming into their marriage knowing how to take care of themselves and how to help out and take care of their wife as well.
And you know that we can expand that argument discussion to say that it's also good for being a roommate, even in college or an apartment. If you have a roommate in an apartment after your boys are out of school, you know, I tell my kids that too. I said, sure, I want you to be a good spouse and take care of yourself and don't be a slob, but I also want you to be a good roommate too. So very good, very good point. Did you just start having them do all kinds of chores? I think as too, like my mother-in-law was this way. My husband is a fantastic house husband, I will say that. But he typically stays with roles that are stereotypical, I should say, to men.
Right. And that was actually, I think, the biggest thing for us to push through. You know, TV, media, it does have roles for men and roles for women, right? That's just honest. But I wanted my kids to be able to do everything because, like you said, it could be that one day they become a roommate with somebody. I also don't want my kids coming home and expecting me to help them with all those things. So, you know, I wanted them to be able to do all of the roles, not just things that they thought were girl things or boy things. And it also goes even further than just helping out in the house. It's emotional. I want them to be emotionally available to their spouse one day. I want them to be able to have physical touch with them and feel comfortable expressing their feelings. I know I grew up in a home where I knew my parents loved me. They told me all the time, but they were not touchy-feely. And then I married a man who was touchy-feely, and I had to learn how to make sure I showed love that way too. So with my children, my two boys, and making sure that they know that it's okay to touch, it's okay to express your feelings, even if you're upset, it's okay to express those feelings of being upset in a mature way, not in a yelling or belittling of somebody else. So for me, you know, it wasn't just about the household items. It was about that too. And also doing things without a grumbling spirit, right? I mean, you can ask somebody to do something in your house, and if they're complaining the whole time they're doing it, you don't want to ask that person to help you again. And now you just lost part of your mate because we're supposed to equally help each other, right? And so if they're grumbling, I don't even want to ask you. So that's another part of it that for me was really important. Don't take the joy out of serving somebody else by grumbling the whole time.
Oh, very good point. Tell us a little bit of more of the tactics you used. How did you, when did you start this? And then, so your boys are 12 and 10, they're perfectly capable of chores, but a couple of the tactics you've used to kind of get them, train them really is what you're raising them to be good future husbands.
Right. Absolutely. So for the more like manual labor, you know, helping out with dishes, helping out with cleaning up their own room, doing their laundry, household items like that. I even have on there doing their own tasks, like, you know, both my boys are in instruments, so getting their practice done every day. We have a chore chart for that. And I tried to do it without it, but I'll be honest, you know, we're busy. I work full time. My husband works full time. A couple days go by and you forget to make sure they're doing those things. So if you give them the responsibility of having that list, it's in a spot where everybody can see it in the home. And then in our house, we actually have not only a chore chart, but underneath it is a financial chart. So just like I get paid every single week by my boss, they get paid by their mom and dad for doing the things that are expected on there, doing it with the right heart, doing it appropriate time, and then they get paid. And we're also teaching them with that how 40% goes to saving, 10% goes to giving back to church or to your community, whatever you give back to, and 50% is for spending right now.
Wow, that's great. And that's true. And, you know, my very good friend of mine, her dad, which first time she got a job, and it was, you know, she was 15, 16, he took 20% just for rent because he said, well, it's because it's going to be me or the government someday. So it was quite funny, but it taught her the lesson, you know. So that's a real life lesson. Thank you so much, Blair, for joining us. BlairCritch.com. Can we find information, more information about these kind of tips on your website?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us. Great segment. BlairCritch.com. When we come back, we're joined by Doug Haddad. He is a PhD, award-winning middle school teacher, author, parenting, education expert, great resume. And he's going to be talking about motivating young adults and also some difficult topics, some warning signs to watch out for. Stay with us.
Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend. Now, Maria Bailey on Mom Talk Radio.
I am excited to be joined by the author of a really cool book. It's called Motherhood is a Bitch, 10 Steps to Regaining Your Sanity, Sexiness, and Inner Diva. She is the co-founder, and I mean, she's the CEO and founder of Divalicious Mom, a national but New York-based network and event company with a database of millions of moms and mompreneurs just like yourself. And she lives in New York City with her husband and three children. Her name is Liz Stern, and she's quite the exciting mom, and we can't wait to talk to her. So welcome, Liz, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you for having me on the show today.
Well, thank you for taking some of your busy time with three kids. I know that it isn't easy. So let me ask you, what inspired your book? Was it real life experiences?
Yes. There were many things that inspired my book. I have three children, a 13-year-old, a 9.5-year-old, and a 3-year-old. And I guess right after my third child was born, which was later on. I had also just lost my father, and I think I just kind of got into a, not a rut or a funk, but I just was in a place where I needed to kind of get myself back. And I went on a retreat by myself up in the Berkshires, and I remember getting to the top of the mountain, and I just sat down on a rock, and I remember just starting to cry and saying to myself, like, I just felt totally overwhelmed with work, the kids, life, not really getting to mourn my father properly just because you have a, family and a job. And I just think everything just had gotten to me, and I wasn't feeling well. And I remember just that was my aha moment of saying, you know, when you get back, you got to make some changes. And with that being said, I started to make changes, and I went along this journey with my husband and my children and my friends. And it really gave me this awakening that to really honestly try and help other moms out there as well that might be kind of in a rut or in stuck in a place where they kind of can't find themselves and get out of. And that's kind of where the book really stemmed from. And it's
What was the biggest change you made in your life?
I think there were a lot of big changes in my life. But one of the big changes was really starting to take better care of myself. Really taking that mommy time out that I talk about and preach about every day for myself. I also started to eat healthier. I started to stop making excuses. I started to exercise. I started to put my foot down and say no and not say yes to everything. I started to, you know, also learn to delegate, learn to ask for help, and realize that I'm only one person and I'm not an octopus and I don't have eight arms. And, you know, I know so many moms were all juggling 101 balls at once, trying not to let one drop. And I think that sometimes we need to take a step back and realize that it's okay to ask for help, and it's okay to say no, and it's okay to have that permission of not feeling where we feel guilty all the time, to kind of get rid of that. So I think that was like also really a great step for me moving forward. And I really honestly, I feel so much better physically and mentally from the little baby steps that I've been doing and giving myself.
And I'm sure it made a big difference in the way you interacted with your children as well, right?
Yes. You know, they always say, and it's, you know, they always say happy wife equals happy life, or happy moms equals happy kids. I think that for me too, I think, you know, putting my foot down a lot more, and seeing my kids also seeing a happier mom and a healthier mom, I think also has helped, you know, make the household work a lot better as well. And the kids are happier, the mom's happier. And I think that, you know, you hear that a lot of times, that once mom's happier, she's feeling better, then everything else kind of grooves together.
Right, right. So tell me about the saying no, because a lot of moms have a really, really hard time with that. But it really, if you looked at your time as currency, you would probably make different decisions than you make when you spend your money and decide where you're spending your money. So how do you say no when you need to say no?
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of times for moms, I know for me personally, you know, with the kids, I wanted to be everywhere for everyone. I wanted to help with school. I wanted to help, you know, within the school. I wanted to help outside of the school. I wanted to help my friends. I always wanted to help. And that was like one of my biggest, I still do. But at the same time now, I have to prioritize, and I know that I can't do everything. So if there is a bake sale, I know that if it's okay that I can buy the cupcakes, and that they don't have to be, you know, I don't have to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning baking them, and my kids are okay, you know, okay with that. And like letting go of some of that, you know, where I always felt like I had to be doing, you know, everything had to be homemade and the costume. You know, it's okay if I go and get a store-bought costume. It's not the end of the world, and the world's not going to fall apart. And also really learning how to, you know, which is really important, and for all moms out there, to really prioritize. And you know what? Every night I can't go out, and there are some nights I can't go out because I need to be home doing homework with my kids, or I can't be at a work event because I need to be with my kids. And learning really how to say no when you want to say yes, but you have to prioritize and figure out what's, you know, really important and where you need to be. So example, right. like last night I was invited to an event that I really wanted to go to to support some of my other friends that are working moms, a networking event, but I couldn't go. I needed to be at my son's school at the same exact time for, a meeting that was really important at the same time. And as much as I felt terrible not being able to go to their event, I know in my heart of hearts, I had to be there for my son. So, and that was right. Okay. Where I would have in the past probably eaten myself up and felt so bad and guilty. I felt bad, but at the same time, I knew that I needed to be there for my son's school. So that
right,
was okay.
Right. So we're going to run out of time, but I want to just get this in there. DivaMoms.com is your website. And can you tell me in 30 seconds what moms will find when they go there?
Sure. Diva Moms is a website that will give you information about our fabulous events. Example, next Thursday, we're doing our annual Mom Moguls Breakfast at Lauren and Taylor with other amazing mom moguls that are on a panel that will talk about being a working mom. And also on the website, you'll find information about new products, anything from wellness, beauty, nutrition, fashion, hospitality. We write about everything on our blog as well. We do a lot of Q&As with a lot of different companies, and we bring you information directly to moms everywhere.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. Really good information, and we have a link to divamoms.com on Mom Talk Radio. When we return, we're going to be speaking with Kate Gorman. She is the author of The Little Book of Baby Child.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
I'm really excited to have with us a author whose book is The Little Book of Baby/Child, and her name is Kate Gorman. She is a licensed clinical social worker with a private practice at New Hartford Naturopathic Health Center in Connecticut, where she interweaves brain reprogramming, holistic health, and family care. We got a lot going on there. She is just one smart lady. That's what I'm going to just go cut to the chase here. And we're here to talk about her new book. So welcome, Kate, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, so you have a lot of really interesting background around holistic health and brain, and there's a lot of books out there about babies and child. So what made you decide that you wanted to write another one, and how is it different?
So I was very inspired with the process of when I became pregnant. I had a strong instinct that basically led me to a lot of holistic choices, such as a midwife and home births, a strong instinct for no ultrasounds, no vaccines, delayed cord cramping. And when I followed that instinct, I began doing a lot of research. And in that, I was also doing research on the brain, the glial cells, the other 90% of the brain cells. And I began interweaving this holistic care with how that could affect the brain. And mm-hmm. So my thinking was that many women are just, they're going to an OBGYN and then they have a couple of choices and they feel as though they should take those choices because of safety or the best care, when there are many multiple choices that can be taken that can actually help affect the development of your child in a really positive way. And so I think the difference with this book is that I try to interweave a lot of humor to try to make it interesting, a lot of anecdotes, but also mm-hmm. I interweave the information on the glial cells and how each decision we make as a parent in both birthing and vaccine choices, nutrition, and even emotional development can affect these really, really important cells.
And so I'm interested in hearing, so what is your take and your thoughts on, let's say, vaccinations, because you just brought it up, and how does that all tie in? Because there's a lot of debate about that.
There is a lot of debate about that. And, you know, one of the things that I encourage people to do is to author and do the research. And that I have found in both integrating information on the glial cells and the body's processes is that, you know, there's a chemical interaction that occurs and affects these cells. So the glial cells normally function in a resting state, and if they become, exposed to toxins, they move into an urgent state. Mm-hmm. And that urgency can create the expression of unhealthy gene codes. So I believe that, you know, vaccinations, especially in the 0 to 2 years, when the brain is really, you know, doing a lot of work informing, can really create a toxicity in the brain, and then therefore there is a possibility of some of these childhood disorders such as autism.
Gotcha, gotcha. So you include a section on emotions. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I have a section both on child feelings and structure, independence, the spiritual self of the child, but I also have a whole section on the emotions of the parent, because this is a really big interaction that occurs when a parent has a young child. Their amygdala gland, which is the emotional center of the brain, often moves into fight or flight because of the frequent crying or sleep deprivation. And a parent can then access their own early childhood memories without really knowing that that's happening. And you can begin this parent-child exchanging. And it can be an evolving process, but it can also be very, very taxing on the parent. And so this section deals with what emotions could be triggered, what concepts, what family imprints the parent could be triggering in this process, and how to overcome them so they don't repeat them in patterns with their own child.
You don't even know that your actions, that you are repeating them. And it's like, unless you're really in tune to yourself and you catch yourself saying, oh my God, I'm acting just like my mother did or my father or whatever. We just have two minutes left. And I was just wondering, what do you think is the most important for families to investigate within, like, holistic choices? There's a lot out there, and what choices should they be making?
You know, nutrition is a big one, because food can be one of the best ways to help the positive expression of genetic code. So I think that that's a big one to, if you were to pick a focus. And then mm-hmm. certainly removing environmental toxins. So, for example, you know, back to nutrition, you know, I recommend, you know, breastfeeding for at least 2 years, because breast milk is the, you know, most nutrient dense food on the planet. So you want to give your child the most of it. And then you're going to look from there at holistic organic choices so that you're not confusing the body's natural processes with chemicals.
Right.
But I also say that go ahead.
We unfortunately are out of time, but I want to make sure that I let everyone know your book is available at, they can purchase it on Amazon, because it's a really important topic, the whole brain development. And I want to thank you so much for sharing some of your expertise with us, and encourage everyone to pick up the book. It's called The Little Book of Baby/Child, and it's by Kate Gorman. So check it out. And when we return, we're going to be speaking with Catherine Firestone. She has created a nonprofit that provides parents with practical and easy to remember strategies to help their children in school.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
Our next guest, Catherine Firestone, had a hard time in school because she suffered from undiagnosed ADHD till her junior year of high school. And she actually... what made her successful during this time was a support system that she had around her. So after college, she worked as a teacher and saw that parents needed help for their kids at home. She has created the Fireborn Institute. It's a nonprofit that provides parents with practical and easy-to-remember strategies to help their kids. And she's here to talk a little bit about it. So welcome, Catherine, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you do a whole lot of things and have this institute. Can you tell us really quickly what parents will find when they go to the site?
Sure. So what they'll find is we have a podcast that they can listen to for really clear, practical strategies that they can use at home. We have some online videos. And then they'll also find some ideas about, we give free lectures at schools, and so they can find some topics that we talk about there, and we're always looking to go to new schools and spread the word.
Well, as a parent who had a child who suffered similarly in her high school years, in fact, we didn't find out she was highly dyslexic until her junior year. I really appreciate all the work that you're doing. So one
Thank
of the
you.
Topics, though, that are on the mind of parents right now is summer camp. And I talk about it all the time. I'm like, don't wait, look now.
yes.
What are some of your tips for finding that perfect summer camp for your child?
Yeah, so I have 5 tips that I'm interested in when I'm looking for a summer camp. And the number one is safety. You are trusting camp with your children, so safety is obviously a big concern. So there are a few things you should look for. The first thing I look for is that it's accredited. The American Camp Association accredits camps and makes sure that they're really safe places for your kids. So I would go to acacamps.org and just see, they've got a big list of camps that they've accredited there. I also want to know about their hiring and training practices, online reviews, and I like to call up the camp and make sure that they really know what they're talking about and that they're excited about it. So the second thing that I'm looking for is a higher purpose. I really want students to get some specific things out of the summer because it's a really great opportunity for them to learn some of the softer skills. So like empathy development, creative problem solving, a can-do attitude, communication skills. So I'm looking for a camp that in their mission statement, they focus on those and that they have specific strategies that they use to get kids to like really acquire those skills over the summer.
Yeah, and I just want to add there that, you know, when your child is, I guess, too old for summer camps or sleepaway camps in your area, don't forget to look toward universities, because I sent my kids to pre-college programs on university campuses, and they were amazing, and they got college credit while they were still in high school.
Totally. Yeah, it's a really good point. The third thing that I'm looking for is for it to be fun. So when kids are having fun, that's when they do a lot of their really great learning. It primes their brains to want to learn. So when you're going to, you know, especially like an academic camp, that's wonderful, but you want to make sure that they've got those opportunities for learning and that it's not the same old school.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what about pricing? Like, do you ever have you learned anything about the quality versus the cost?
Yeah, so that's a good question. The quality does not necessarily improve with the cost of the camp. So you can get a really good value, a really great quality camp for not as expensive. A lot of that money can go in that you pay for high cost camp often goes into the advertising that they do for it. So what you want to be on the lookout for is talking to the camps. You don't necessarily need all the fancy equipment. What you want from camp is that kids are going to have fun and meet friends and do really cool things over the summer. You don't need that fancy equipment necessarily. So it's really about like the quality of the counselors and the activities that you're going to be doing there and not the fancy equipment.
Right. Well, thank you so much for all of that. And I want to remind everyone they can find you at fireborninstitute.org and learn more about everything that you're providing parents, because it's a really, really great site. And I want to thank all of you for joining us today on Mom Talk Radio. Thanks for being with us. And we'll see you again next time here on the station this time, or catch us on our podcast at momtalkradio.com. Thanks, everybody.